High Wages by Dorothy Whipple, read by Sara Poyser. Preface. What possessed me to write about a girl in a shop? I know nothing about it, wrote Dorothy Whipple in her journal on the day she finished and posted High Wages to the publisher which had brought out her first novel, Young Anne, in 1927. When Jonathan Cape refused the new novel, believing it would not be a commercial success, Dorothy was downcast but not discouraged. She sent it to John Murray, who accepted it. Her postscript, written in Random Commentary, a selection of extracts from her notebooks and journals published in 1966, happily points out that the book afterwards sold thousands of copies and is now in its 10th edition. The truth is that, like many women and thousands of delighted readers, Dorothy Whipple knew a great deal about girls in shops, especially those in dress shops. Indeed, she unconsciously reveals her keen interest in the subject of clothing on the very next page of Random Commentary when, apropos the invitation of Lord Gorrell, a director of John Murray, to meet in London to discuss High Wages, she writes with relief, "Thank goodness I've got my new coat." Despite her misgivings about her subject matter, Dorothy Whipple is undoubtedly at home in High Wages. Although she later came to be associated with the Midlands, they knew Mr. Knight, they were sisters, and the Priory are all set in that part of England. This novel is set in her beloved home county of Lancashire. That grand, poetic landscape, she called it, which she observes with deep interest and portrays with affection, humour, and pride. It is a celebration of the Lancastrian values of hard work and stubbornness, and there could be no finer setting for a shop girl made good story than the county in which cotton was king, muck was turned into brass on a daily basis, judges of cotton staple are revered on the exchange, and the nearby cities of Manchester and Liverpool were world-renowned centres of progress and industrial energy. It might have been satanic and hellish in some respects. There are echoes of Dickens' Hard Times in the description of the mills Jane sees from the train as she travels to and from Manchester. But Dorothy Whipple recognised that it was nevertheless pulsatingly alive and full of opportunity for an ambitious young girl. When High Wages was published in 1930, readers in the Northwest must have experienced thrills of recognition as they read about the places and character types they knew. The prosperous businessman with spats and flamboyant buttonholes and furriers with diamond shirt studs, the dishes of sheep's head and tripe, Parkin, Jumbles and Berry Simnel cake, the cleverly noted, pettily snobbish class distinctions between St. Anne's and Blackpool. Just as I did, in fact, when I first read the novel several years ago and found myself recalling bus trips in the 1960s with my grandmother to the shops of Manchester, the steamy confines of the basement Cardamar Cafe in St. Anne's Square, the smell of tripe emanating from the UCP shop and, above all, the plushness, poshness and glamour of Kendall's on Deansgate. The story is given extra northern flavour with a sprinkling of Alan Bennett-style observations. Dorothy Whipple enjoyed listening to other people's conversations and wrote down many gems overheard on buses, in Turkish baths, golf clubs, hotels and restaurants. So Jane speculates about Mr. Briggs's dropped stomach. Maggie calls eau de cologne, eau de clone, and the wonderfully comic exchange between Mrs. Briggs and her Blackpool landlady is worthy of anything performed by Thora Heard or Victoria Wood. As well as being a marvellously engrossing and deeply caring novel, High Wages has tremendous historical value, although, as ever with Dorothy Whipple, the reader never feels she is being browbeaten about social issues. Unlike many of her contemporary, often male writers, such as H.G. Wells and Arnold Bennett, who dealt with similar subjects of shop girls and dressmakers, but with the clear objective of pressing home their arguments for social change, Mrs. Whipple's non-judgmental style leaves the reader free to draw her own conclusions. And, because of the author's